All right, we are back. Heart of Darkness, After Dark, Brad's monumental episode with our friend of the show, Jason Gallagher, resident poet, poet emeritus.
Oh, he was the man. He was the man, dude.
He was like, so good. And even when I started ranting at him about read the poetry, read more poetry, he really took it on. And
this is a guy who loves poetry and understands poetry. Yeah, it was great. Yeah,
people have an idea of what poetry is, and it's just garbage. Fantastic, man. Yeah, well, so, I know we have some stuff to talk about. I felt like I dropped the ball a little bit on the Minnesota connection.
Yeah.
And I'm frankly a little ashamed that I didn't know more of his history, although that is sort of a perfectly Minnesotan thing at the same time.
Like, yeah, it's sort of like old John.
He took a little tumble off the bridge there. You know, I mean, it's like there is a bit of that. Like you go on the Wikipedia page for that bridge, and it, I mean, if we were in other places in the world,
there would be
a plaque, there would be something. maybe not to his place of suicide, but I think it would just be better known. But then again, maybe I'm just obtuse and I wasn't paying attention.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It seems like there should be a, I'm sure on University of Minnesota, somewhere the name John Berryman is, it does seem like with the reputation this guy had and what he meant for the world of poetry in America, that man, he this story should be better known. I've got an English degree and an MFA. Yeah. You've got an MFA. You went to University of Minnesota, and somehow this story never passed before our eyes. It's kind of amazing.
But it's such a painful story. I missed some really funny Minnesota jokes too. Like when he when he got kicked out of Iowa for assaulting one of his grad students a sexual assault of
that was the beginning of a spiral. But yes,
okay, I understand. And and of course, you know, Minnesota took him because anybody can get into Minnesota. It is really funny. Good for him. I mean, it's a great institution. I can make fun of it. Nobody else gets back.
Fair enough. Fair enough. I don't know enough about it to make fun of it.
You really went hard at Wayne State too.
I did.
Like only one of those was a dud.
Yeah. Well, Wayne State is, you know, it's my first alma mater. I got an engineering degree from there. And so I shouldn't be upset. It's paid my bills for a long, long time, but
yeah, man. I'm glad that I got off the farm and came to the bigger farm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One thing I wanted to, what we're starting to tease about is we're going to do a little bit of my favorite murder podcast sort of, because we're going to have our first sort of true crime thing.
That's a very popular podcast.
It is. I mean, hey, coattails, ride them.
Yep.
And this involves John Berryman's mother, Martha Little, who would later go by the name Jill Angel.
what? That family was bonkers.
It was all bonkers, every single one of them. So the story goes, John Berryman, so this is not case closed by any means, but John Berryman's father, John Allen Smith Sr., and as we remember from the episode, John Berryman, our John Berryman, was named after his father. He was then adopted by the guy that her mother was cheating with, who then married her and then adopted him. Right? This is weird to be called. It's weird to be called the name of the man that your mother went and cheated with. That's strange. Anyway,
It reminds me vaguely of, I think it was Salvador Dali, who he's going to be. Fun
big episode.
I wonder. Yeah, that might be one you and I just do in tandem. But his parents had a son before him. The son died in very young.
Okay,
and his name was Salvador.
Oh,
so wow. And they had a picture of him on the wall. So Dali had this. Don't do like, things like this to people.
Yeah.
It's called boundaries. It's right. Healthy boundaries right. is what you call yeah. it. Yeah.
And names yeah. are big. Names are important. I mean, you can name somebody just something out of a baby book, and then maybe it won't have ghosts attached to it. Or maybe you do want to name them after their grandparent or whatever. But yeah, you got to be conscious of it, because that's what they're going to call themselves. You know, they mean something. Names mean something for sure. Yeah. So John Berryman's father killed himself. That's the official story. They lost all their money. Martha was leaving him. John Berryman's father had a Cuban mistress. She stole whatever remained of his money and disappeared back to Cuba. However, there are some suspicious facts about this death. So let me just read from the Paul Mariani biography. With a land bust, John Allen Smith Sr.'s suicide, or sorry, with the land bust, suicide had become a common occurrence. And to the Tampa police, Smith's death merely added one more victim to the grisly statistics. The pistol used in the shooting had belonged to Martha Smith, his mother, and had been given to her by her husband 4 years earlier. And the coroner judged that John Smith, age 39, had died of self-inflicted wound from that gun. Fine. Irregularities in the report were passed over. So, for example, while there were bloodstains on Smith's shirt, there were no powder burns. Impossible in the case of a self-inflicted gunshot wound. When the police questioned her, Martha told them she'd looked out the window that Saturday morning on waking and thought she'd seen her husband sitting in their car. But when she'd gone downstairs, he was no longer there. She had gone back upstairs to get her car keys and had then found a note on her husband's dresser, quote, weighted down by pocket articles. It read, quote, "Dear Peggy, again, I'm not able to sleep. 3 nights now and the terrible headaches." The note had been left unsigned. Alarmed, she said, she had run back downstairs, and there at the back of the apartment, she had discovered her husband's body. Much was made at the hearing of Smith's insomnia and depression, but nothing of his marital problems or the impending divorce or the absence of powder burns. For the police, it was an open and shut case, one more casualty of the Florida land bust and the failure of the American dream. Okay, a little bit skipping ahead. After the burial, Martha took her boys, so that's John Berryman and his brother, to Stillwater to visit her husband's family, whom she had not seen since her wedding 14 years before. The visit turned out to be even worse than the earlier visit, for Leonard Smith, the one person who had shown Martha any kindness, had since died. The family had accepted John Smith's death as a suicide because one of Smith's sisters, so this would be John Berryman's aunt, 2 years older, had already committed suicide. Only Cora, Aunt Cora, the oldest sister, believed Martha had killed her husband. So pretty good, pretty likely that Martha or possibly John Berryman Sr., the adopted father, killed Berryman's dad.
Yikes.
Which is dark, right? And so dark. And John Berryman would struggle with this stuff about his dad his whole life. And towards the end, he just kind of had to admit, like, I didn't really know him. I was 12. He was a little bit estranged for me for most of those years anyway. He was a kind of a depressive guy. You know, he was a difficult dude to get to know. And then he was, you know, fairly young. And then Martha had no interest in, other than this visit, in keeping the memory alive, right? It was, she left and she'd married this other man, and so forget about him. And
I noticed something during the episode where I think you said he was shot through the chest. Is that correct?
Yes.
I don't know if
nobody would do that.
Most suicides, you kind of know you don't want to. The natural thing. I mean, I hate to be graphic about it, but I think when you think about a suicide by gun,
yeah. It's to the head.
I mean,
yeah. If you're really trying to do
a thing, and you don't really want to risk like bleeding out slowly,
right.
So,
and then yikes. no powder burns, which isn't really, that's not gonna, it's just, it doesn't make sense. And then he's just on the ground outside.
Yeah,
like that's weird too, right? Like,
yeah.
I mean, it's not that it couldn't happen, but it seems unlikely
there are so many suicides that we keep coming up with. Yeah,
that's true.
I think it's unfortunately a much more common. And if we have a chuckle about this, it's never in a mean-spirited way.
No,
I think you laugh because you're maybe get a little uncomfortable.
Yeah, yeah, it's a little bit like, of
well, nervous laughter. Well, yeah. I think it's probably far more common than we really want to process, and probably particularly in these artists' lives. And then you have these families where a parent will do something like that. And then obviously this is a recurring theme in the, in the show, both Kevon and Berryman here now. And it's like, there's something about losing that figure that just, it's a recipe for artists.
It really is. Yeah. 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 In
not exclusively, but it's just, there are so many great artists where it just comes up. It's like, it's a motif on the show. Yeah. It's so, what a bizarre fact of human nature or our,
Berryman has a great, so he's talking about his dream songs, right? And I think he says a phrase in the dream songs that's really apropos to kind of what we do in the show. So one thing he says, and this is not quite it, but it builds up to it. He says, talking about the dream songs, his great volume of poetry published in the early 70s, won a Pulitzer, influenced. I mean, this is the one thing I said in the show, but like after reading a bunch of John Berryman poetry and realizing where he came from and kind of knowing the literary lineage, I realized that like every poet I met who's like in my generation is influenced by John Berryman. It's like
poets,
it's in the water. So one thing he says, these songs are not meant to be understood. You understand, they are only meant to terrify and comfort. Okay. And then another thing he says about them, talking about them and the pain in them, he says, the wounds talk to you. And I think that's something about being an artist with something like this in your past, that wound, it's talking the whole time and you're in communication with it and you're trying to, you know, you're trying to interrogate it and soothe it and sometimes just rip it out of you. And it's always kind of there.
It's the quintessence of trauma.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And of course the word trauma is the German word for dream.
Right. Trauma song. Yeah. No, that's amazing.
So, but we mustn't write about our dreams, Brad,
This
fancy lad in the New York Times.
Yeah, where, there's no market. There's no market for dream writing. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this is one of those things. It's like, I can't take any critic that says something like that serious, man. What do critics know anyway? I mean, there's some good ones for sure, but you know. One thing, so let me read, there's a couple things that we didn't read in the main episode that sort of relate to this father thing and whatnot. This is a letter he wrote to his little brother, Robert, when they were like in their 20s, I think. From the violent world our fathers bought, for which we play with fantasy at dawn, dismay at noon, fatigue, horror by night, may love or an image in work bring you the brazen luck to sleep with dark and so to get responsible delight. And then here's a poem. I don't think it was actually published in any collections, but it's from the biography called Father and Son. The man taken this morning from the water has had his turn and he has written down in all. The man taken this morning from the water has had his turn and he has written down in all the dusty offices of failure but one. Surviving him there is a son, who yet may patch the name and memory for analysts in the great time to be. I like that one. It's sort of like...
I feel that so much.
I bet.
You know, that always comes back for me on these shows.
There
was always, even in our situation, there was a lot of ambivalence about how my father died right away. There were different stories. There were conflicting opinions. I've pieced together my own theory about it based on science that came out. It came out right around the time my mother passed away as well. Right. So I have I guarantee if we got my stepfather out, he would have a different story. There are all sorts of like extremely bizarre Berryman synchronicities. Like my mother's name was Peggy. My mother remarried very rapidly after my father passed away. Wasn't shot in the yard.
Right.
But I mean, you know, and you can't help but just kind of, and I'm not trying to insert myself.
No, not at all.
But it always just kind of, it's there in the background and it's like, oh man.
Yeah. I was thinking of you reading while doing this research, honestly. I was like, yeah, this is almost more of a Kevin episode than a Brad episode, really. I mean, it's just coincidental.
Yeah, no, you crushed it.
Yeah, well, thank you. Appreciate it.
We're just getting started. We've done so many of these already, but it's like bottomless.
Yes. Oh, yeah. It never ends. Yeah. Oh, yeah, there's people, like I said, there's people we haven't even, you and I knew the name John Berryman, and that was about it. And
he was a guy in my backyard.
Yeah.
And in both our backyards in a funny way.
Yeah. Yeah.
Isn't this just how, I mean, sometimes it just is that way. Like you take for granted the thing, it's just the name floating around, but there's also an extraordinary amount of bias. And we came up, I mean, our friend Jason, I think made it pretty clear that he's, is out of vogue. Like Hemingway is out of vogue.
Yeah.
Now they're like museum pieces and you don't even dare kind of engage with them because they're the whatever.
Yeah. And I think the people who do still like it are probably because there's the racial component, right? Especially in the Dream Songs, he's using basically like black voice. Right. And I think probably for people who like it, there's a little bit of fear of like, you know what, let's not talk about Berryman because like, let's not get him in trouble. kind of thing. You know, he's like, he's fine where he is. But if we disturb it now, oh my God, now we got to talk about Berryman and, you know, is he a racist?
Yeah. Well, and you have all these weird associations. That's one thing that I'm proud of with our show is that we're just doing it and we're sensitive enough to not to step over moments like that. But how much of that was used in the Dream Songs?
It's not in every one, but it's pretty frequent. I mean, it's like another voice talking to it. You know, if you think of it as voices in the head, it's one of the prominent voices, but not the main voice, I would say. And I think, you know, only even when there are times where it comes up where it's not, it's clearly that it's that voice, but there's nothing parodic about it. Like you can't argue that it's making fun of anybody. It's a vernacular, you know, and to me it works. I'm not as sensitive to those issues. I understand them and I see them there, but I think, you know, I think just because you use, you know, black vernacular, just using it hypothetically does not automatically mean it's racist.
right. Yeah. Some people do, though.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
Just that's like, no.
Right. So, yeah, some people are like, if you take the G off a gerund, you're a racist or something. You know, it's
right.
Just hold on. Did you read the poem and try to think about
it? Just try to talk to each other for a minute.
Yeah. Right, right. So. So, you know, and nothing he'd done in his life really indicated that he was calling up Ralph Ellison drunk in the middle of the night being like, are you okay with this?
Right. That is pretty cringe.
Right. It is.
Don't do that.
No, agreed. Yeah. But it does indicate that he was interested in it coming off the way he wanted it.
I mean, far worse than these poems, I think, are the repeated like sexual assaults.
Oh,
like,
that's like, way worse.
That's just gonna cause problems.
Yeah, and it was happening. Yeah. That was happening a lot. Yeah.
This guy was a creature of habit. I mean, I can't believe that he ended up in the hospital that many times for booze. But even that thing that you said about him going into the hospital just for a break, that was fascinating.
Right.
That says so much about his childhood and the neglect that he probably experienced.
Yeah, I think he wanted to be taken care of.
Yeah. I think a lot of people do.
Sure. I can't even really hold it against them. Yeah, it's a painful experience. So
that is one of the appeals of drug use, heavy drug and alcohol use, which I don't think is talked about, I mean, very often, and maybe it's just me, but you put yourself in a state of dependency.
Right.
Oh, I'm
not
driving.
Right.
Oh, I'm in for the night.
Right.
Oh,
right.
Let's just order takeout.
Yeah. I can't live up to my responsibility. You know, I can't. Yeah.
And you get to, so culturally, it kind of gives you a little corner where you can step back into infancy. Yeah.
I also think of, did you see Phantom Thread? Paul Thomas Anderson's movie.
I tried to watch it a couple of times and I just couldn't get into it.
It's not the best PTA film, but it's quite good. But there's an interesting bit in it because the main character, who I can't remember the name of, but is played by the great actor. What's his name?
The Phantom.
Same guy who played There Will Be Blood. I just think of him.
I know who you're talking about.
But yeah, the great actor, Irish. I think he's an Irish guy. Anyway, played Abraham Lincoln. He's this like high powered clothing designer, and he meets this woman who poisons him, and then like puts him in like into a situation where like she's taking care of him, right? Like to take him down a peg, and he realizes that. And by the end of the film, he asks her to do it again because it puts him in this state, like where you're talking, like he's almost in a borderline fetish kind of way in her care all of a sudden. And she nurses him back to help. Daniel Day-Lewis, she nurses him back to health and she builds him back up. And she's the one like, you know, and he gets this restorative power of like going from, you know, being kind of destroyed to like building himself back up. So there's probably some of that too. Like I'm recovering my powers kind of thing too. But yeah.
It's fascinating. And it's a way for grown people to revert to. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Something that, and I think people get addicted to those feelings as much as the chemicals. It's a combination of the brain being rewired, the chemical, the dopamine hits, you get burnt out over time. But I think initially a lot of it starts with this psychological rush. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And eventually. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Fair to say Berryman is he's the top alcoholic.
I think so. Camp.
Yeah, so far, the little cast of characters that we've collected in our funhouse of Art of Darkness.
Yeah, mm. Yeah. And we've had some rough ones. I mean, William Faulkner was no lightweight.
Was he ending up at the hospital 20 times?
A couple times, but his stuff was more, he went to the hospital more when he had like fell off a horse or something. He wasn't, think Berryman was far worse. I mean, Berryman was younger by a decade. Than Faulkner in the end. So
I looked at Berryman's age, 59, and I'm 39, and I started doing that calculus.
Yeah,
and 40 is coming up on me, and starting to feel it. Starting to feel like that math, because 20 years. I mean, I assume I'm going to live at least to be 70, but there's no guarantee.
No.
It really makes you think like, what are you doing with your time and how are you spending these precious years, man?
Yeah. And he had the same feelings, man. He hit 30 and he felt like he'd done nothing. He'd had a book of poetry out, you know, and he hadn't had nothing. He hadn't had no accomplishments, but it wasn't what he felt like he could do.
I admire the man for his ambition.
Yeah. Anytime, you know, and there's a little bit of selection bias here because we're talking about, in some sense, in terms of artistic recognition, in some sense, we're talking about mostly the winners of that game. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
But I do admire the, like, and Faulkner did it too, when he's, you know, working in that rural power plant, that thing of like, I am going to do something great and then actually doing it. And that's like, dang. Okay.
Is it even possible to do something great if you don't set out to do it?
Right. Right.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't, when artists and authors and things, I think sometimes in an interview, they'll be like, I kind of just stumbled into this. No, you didn't.
Yeah. It's like you Joe may have Rogan. Gotten, Rogan you may have always says, yeah. Rogan always says that. Oh, I just do a show with my friends, man. And this thing, you know, it's just everything.
No, you know, he's a,
you
he's
were
a
already
maniac.
In Hollywood. You were already in show business.
Well, and he's
nothing
workaholic
but respect,
too. But yeah. But I think that it's like, people don't want to, and I respect that too, not wanting to claim all.
You don't
want to
boast. You don't want to go, no, I set out to make the greatest radio show going.
Right. And I did it. Damn it.
And I did it.
Screw you, Dad.
They're all be rich. And yeah, it's not a good look. Yeah.
No, it's not. But yeah, I know I never really buy it. It's like, yeah, you probably did get kind of lucky a few times. You know, the ball bounced your way.
Again, you're already in Hollywood. You're having a career in show business.
Right.
Already. So But I think again though, these things can take a life of their own too. So it's a bit tricky. But Berryman strikes me as the like a maniac like Kubrick, where nobody was gonna stop him from making his movie, from writing his book of poetry.
Those poems were gonna come and you know, it took him a little while to find his voice. But when you're gonna, you know, change the rules of how it's done or how it can be done, it's gonna take a while to figure that out. You're not gonna necessarily just, you know.
He looks a little bit like an American Alan Moore.
He does.
He's got a real, like the wise man on the plains kind of a vibe.
Yeah.
I mean, say what you want about it. You can sell that.
Oh yeah. No, there was marketable. Yeah. His big thing was an article late in his life when he was living in Dublin, a feature length article called Whiskey and Ink. And it's just, you know, him and he's in great photos of him. He's in bars talking to like old Irish guys, and he's by the seashore with the wind blowing his beard. And it's like, you know, doing that. Yeah. It's pretty.
People want that as much as the writing itself.
They
sometimes.
Do. Yeah. Yeah. And for sure.
You just have to, we have to redo our website, I think.
Hey,
no,
yeah. Hey, if they like that, they, you know, click on our links and
there you go. Well, are you dying to say anything else about
I don't think so.
I think that it's so fascinating that he ended up in Minnesota, and there's plenty of hard living and heavy drinking that goes on up here. There's an image of everything's nice in Stillwater. You are right across, like I said, from the giant keg of the north.
Right.
Wisconsin. And
Wisconsin is, I think, the hardest drinking state, I believe. Yeah.
Yeah. It's that or North Dakota.
Right.
And it's binge drinking. And it's the German, you know, Americans. So just, that's just the thing. It's such a contrasting image to Berryman in Minneapolis, because I'm gonna have to process this for a while. He lived there for many years, didn't he?
Yeah, I don't remember the exact date, but yeah, it's like 15 years, maybe 20 years even.
That bridge that he tumbled, did he? Well, we don't. We're never gonna know if he threw himself over or if he just fell.
He apparently just kind of like fell.
Just let himself go.
I mean, he was doing it on purpose, but you know, in terms of he didn't really jump. He had written, and I didn't get this in there. He'd had this like Spanish knife that somebody had gifted to him, and he wrote a poem about standing on that bridge and cutting his neck before he fell. And some of the biography suggests that he may have one night gone up to where he jumped off and like kind of felt what it would be like.
Scouted it.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
That bridge is probably the most heavily trafficked bridge in the state of Minnesota.
Really?
I walked over that bridge hundreds of times because the University of Minnesota, good school, one side of the campus is on one side of the Mississippi River. The other side of the campus is on the other side of the Mississippi River. Huh. And if it's still like it was when I was there in the before times, that you would quite directly plan your schedule, because if you had to come from the East Bank, which is where a lot of like the language classes are and the science, to where the social sciences are, so a lot of history, philosophy, the philosophy department's on the other, I think math is maybe over in that building. There's a couple of prominent buildings. You had to plan, okay, it's going to be December 8th Minnesota.
Right.
And I am going to have to hustle. And you just have to picture everybody bundled up. And that, if you look at the bridge.
What is it called?
It's called the Washington Avenue Bridge. Is that it?
Yeah, I think that's right.
Yeah. And that bridge very famously has like a heated walkway.
Oh, wow.
So you just got to imagine all the co-eds. You haven't seen a woman's neck in 3 months.
Right.
Everybody's bundled up in scarves, and you're just hustling to go to your philosophy seminar on the other side of campus. So it's part of the life there.
Wow.
And of course,
it doesn't seem that high, to be honest.
It's quite high. You're up above.
Okay. Maybe it's because, a scale. There's no human in this picture.
It's because what you're looking at is the, let me draw it up because this is good. This is a, I have some standing. I know this bridge.
You do.
You got to look at some different photos of it because the walking path is above the road.
So so he's like another, that would have been like another 10 or 20 feet higher.
Yeah. He's like a whole layer up.
Yeah.
So it's plenty high.
And okay.
If you fall down onto that island down there, you're cooked.
Oof.
Yep. That's a pretty hard way to go, man.
Yeah.
That bridge still haunts my dreams.
Ooh. And there's something about, I mean, this guy, we'll kind of close it here. I don't want to go on for 3 more hours, but there's something about this guy. He's born in Choctaw country. Right. Born on the reservation and becomes a great American writer. And then he basically dies in the Mississippi River,
throws himself into the Mississippi,
basically. Like there's something, there's something poetic about that, I suppose.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Bolaño was an addict. So we're coming up to him next. So we get an addict.
Okay.
I don't believe that he committed suicide. I'm going to have to start digging in.
Yeah,
but that's going to be, it's going to be fun. Yeah. I know. I think he just destroyed himself with heroin. So another one of those. And
Just get somebody who's like a cheery, nice story.
Right. Or somebody that we're even sympathetic to. Cause like the person who's maybe a little cheerier, like Walt Disney, kind of cheery.
Yeah.
Loathsome.
Yeah. Right. Right. Yeah.
Can't stand the man.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Well, that's the thing. It's like some of these people, I wavered in how much sympathy I had for Berryman. At times I had sympathy. And then other times he did stuff. I was like, dude, come on,
this stuff beating up your grad students, but being, and then also a different time, but being so good that you're just gonna go up the river and
get another job. Yeah, crazy. Yeah. Crazy. Crazy.
But yeah, man, times have changed.
Yeah Well, we'll be talking about Robert Aikman soon. I don't know much about Robert Aikman. I think the darkest thing he did was like preserve a historic canal or something. So that one might be
a light lift. Okay, well, I'm gonna go and rinse off and thank you. Thank you for sharing Berryman with me. And
That was great.
Jason, resident poet now. Amazing.
Oh, he's the man. We'll have him back, so and we'll either have him back in a core episode or he'll come back and do a dark room with us or whatever. So he's a friend of the show now for sure. So
you gotta be angry about poetry.
That's right.
A little bit.
A little bit, yeah.
All right.
All right, man.
I'll be good.
All right. Yeah, bye.